Fox on it.
Welcome to Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset with your host, Brian Keane.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is going to be a Q&A, so I pulled from all my social media platforms, Facebook Live, Instagram Live and Snapchat. So if you're not following me on those, Brian Keane Fitness on Facebook and Instagram and BrianK019 on Snapchat. So any questions that you want to send into the podcast, they all come from those platforms. So just check me out on there and I'll be pulling them at random going forward from now as well. First question. From Ryan Wee Man McKeever, how many extra calories do to build lean muscle with minimal body fat? Okay, so this one works for both genders, whether guy or girl. Anybody that's looking to build lean muscle, again, it looks different depending on gender. When guys think lean muscle, they normally think more muscle mass, their chest and arms, and they're bigger. For girls, lean muscle is more muscle tone and definition. So it works for both genders. It's just going to be relative to the amount of calories you're taking in the training program you're following. So the number one thing for building lean muscle and with minimal body fat is going to be aligning your training, your nutrition, your supplements all geared towards that. There, you can potentially do both. You can build lean muscle and you can minimize your body fat, but you need to get everything on point. It's just a lot easier to cut or bulk. To cut, you just go into a calorie deficit and you make sure that you're burning more calories than you're eating. To bulk, you just go into a calorie surplus. You make sure you're eating more calories than you're burning. And it's a lot easier. So most people just do a bulk or cut because it's normally as straightforward as that. Obviously, you play around with your calories, you play around with your macros, you play around with your training, but overall, it's as simple as going into a surplus or a deficit. To build lean muscle with minimal body fat, or to even reduce your body fat, is going to be down to calculating your macros and calculating your calories, and then playing around with those numbers until you find the sweet spot for you. What I've normally found has worked incredibly well for people that come through my Top 50 program, for example, who've had a similar, and I'll use them as a context because it's very similar to people that come through my program, would try and build lean muscle but minimize body fat, or else try and reduce body fat on top of it, would be to make sure that you've calculated your maintenance calories and then eat around that and then train in a specific way so that you're able to build lean muscle and do higher bang for your buck cardio exercises that can help preserve muscle and burn body fat. So let me explain. If your calorie maintenance, which is the calories you need to stay the same weight, is 2,500 calories, you're probably going to want to play around with that 2,500 to 3,000 calorie, probably the 2,700, 2,800, 2,900 range, possibly 3,000 calories, depending on where you're getting your calories from, whether from fats, protein, or carbohydrates, is very much going to allow you to build lean muscle, providing that there's enough amino acids there to repair the cells and the fibers that you've torn down in workouts. So what I would probably advise you do, Ryan, to start off with, is I would probably go to about 2,800, 2,900, or 3,000 calories. You could even cycle them. I cycle calories in my Top 50 program, so they're slightly higher on harder days. And again, the carbohydrate intake is varied because of the amount of tension that people are working for in the program. So your program does affect the kind of nutrition that you'll have. But I would advise going to that 2,800, 2,900, 3,000 mark if 2,500 is your maintenance calories, and that's your moving around maintenance calories. That's not your BMR where you're just lying in a bed and you don't move all day and it comes up at 1,900. You know, you got to add on 300, 400, 500 depending on your day job, how active you are. That's why it's a little bit harder to calculate it, because you can, it's as easy to get your BMR as to go into Google, put in BMR calculator, and it'll bring up your maintenance calories. But that's your maintenance calories at rest. That's how many calories you need to eat if you were lying in bed all day just to stay the same weight and for your brain and body to function. So it's normally a good bit lower, and then you manipulate it depending on your lifestyle, the goals and what you're doing. And then obviously there's no one size fits all. The reason my Top 50 program, that I track it myself and I do Q&As back and forth, and I've got him and my coach working with people during the week, is because there is no one size fits all with training and nutrition. It's going to be varied depending on each person's metabolism, the way each person digests fats and carbohydrates, each person's background, the training programs they've been following previously, and so many other things that come into play that it's very hard to give an exact number. But the one I would start with, not Ryan, is you're playing with that 500 above your maintenance, and then timing your protein that it's high enough, making sure you're getting enough to repair the cells and repair the fibers, sorry, that you're tearing in your workouts, and then focused on tension during your training. It's going to build lean muscle, failing at hypertrophy parameters, 8 to 10 reps. And then I would add in high intensity interval training, HIIT, as your main cardio, purely because it can preserve more muscle, but it can also help burn body fat. So if you check out any of the studies on low intensity steady state cardio versus high intensity interval training, you're going to see a lot more muscle saving benefits with the high intensity interval training. Even though low intensity does work great for some people, provided you factored it into your program, the main benefit being that you're supposed to technically take your fat stores, and if you're at 70% of your max heart rate, which is 220 minus your age, you're going to be able to use your fat as a fuel source so you can get leaner during steady state. Personally, again, it's context dependent on each person. I never found low intensity as good as high intensity for preserving muscle and losing body fat at the same time. So if I'm hedging my bets, I would always go with high intensity over low intensity. But again, depending on your metabolism and each person's individual metabolism, so I can bring value to everybody listening to this answer, it's going to be a trial and error on what works best for you. I've had people come through my program, and I'll use them again for context. Some people come through doing all low intensity, some do all high intensity, which is the staple, which is the set one at the beginning of the program, and some will use a combination of both. There's a cardio and abs day in there as well in my top 50 program that has a combination of both, purely for aesthetic purposes. But again, some people respond incredibly well to low intensity, others to high intensity, and some people don't respond at all to either or the other. So for example, I don't respond that well to low intensity steady state cardio. I always respond better to high intensity interval because it's harder for my body and I'm so active during the day that low intensity walking on a treadmill doesn't do anything for me. If you're somebody that's stands on your feet all day and you're moving around all day, walking for 30 minutes on a treadmill is probably not going to burn that much body fat because your body's already active during the day. You're going to have to do something to shock up that system. So that's where high intensity interval training can come in. But again, this is context on each person's lifestyle, each person's schedule, and what works for each individual person. As I said, the reason my top 50 program that I track and Emma tracks it is purely down to the fact that there is no one size fits all when it comes to pure body composition. It's different for athletes. It's different for people that are looking to get faster, people looking to get stronger, people that are just looking to get into incredible shape and get better for their sport. All of these things can be a little bit more set with tweaking, whereas body composition, things as difficult as building lean muscle while minimizing body fat or reducing body fat, needs a little bit more context on lifestyle, schedule, previous plans, current eating regimen, and all of these things. So hopefully that has provided you guys with value, because that goes across the board for everybody. It's going to be a bit of trial and error, working with the right numbers for macros and calories, and then timing your workouts, doing the right training program with the right cardio system that works best for you. Next question from Ronan McAvey. I hate the gym that's always packed. I hate waiting for machines. Any tips? Okay, so if you're somebody that trains at peak times, it's a very, very frustrating time to be in the gym when you're sitting waiting for a machine or sitting waiting for equipment. Again, I've had people come through my programs, both programs, my GA Lean Body and Top 50, that there's options of movements that you can do and the order to do them, because if you train at peak times, you may not be able to do movements in certain orders. For example, I always try and design programs so that the harder movements are towards the beginning and the middle when you're freshest, and then you're easing off with isolations and or else finishers at the end, where you need less space, or you're doing more body weight, or you're doing a lighter weight where you're not going to injure yourself with fatigue. But sometimes when the gym is busy, you can't do it in that order. My advice, and works, something that works tremendously well, is try and find a space in the gym and then do a workout or a circuit in the corner on those days. If you're someone that trains always at peak times, you have an advantage in terms of, you know that you're not going to get, be able to move from giant sets and move from one move to the other, to the other, to the other. However, you are going to be able to do a giant set in the corner with a bench. If you're doing chest, for example, you can do a press, you can do a fly, you can do a push-up off the bench, and then you can set it on an incline and do another fly. You can do a giant set that way. So if you know that you're always going to be in the gym at peak times, and I've had people come through my programs that know that they're going to train at 7 a.m. or they know they're training at 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. after work, there's an advantage there that you know that you're not going to be able to get from a machine to a bench to another piece of equipment. So you build the program, or you tweak the movements, and you tweak the plan, and you tweak what you're doing around the fact that you know you're not going to be able to get at that equipment. So I would design your program and build your program around what you can do in one space. The same with the back. You can do a bent over barbell row, you can do a bent over dumbbell row, you can do an incline row on a bench, and you can do a single arm row with partials. That's another giant set with rowing movements that you can do off a bench with just a barbell and some dumbbells that you can go into the corner of the gym and do. So that's a very good way of doing it. However, if you're someone that goes in at different training times and it just happens to be very, very busy, what I have my clients do and the people that come through my program is on those days is literally just take dumbbells, and there's a home workout version of the program that has dumbbells. You can literally take that, go to a corner and do the full workout in the corner with dumbbells. You may have to change the weight of dumbbells depending on the movements you're doing, but that's another B plan that people can use. Even though most people tend to just vary the workout and actually pull and change up movements, but that's another side plan that you can do. So have a plan B workout, if it's chest or full body or upper or lower, whatever split you're doing, that you have a plan B in your back pocket at all times, that you know that, look, the gym's way too busy today. I am not in the mood for sitting around waiting on machines. And you know that you can grab two sets of dumbbells or three sets of dumbbells, you can go to the corner and you can do your entire workout. The truth is, you need very little equipment. You can do an incredible workout with just your body weight. You add in some dumbbells or a barbell or a kettlebell or a box or a bench, and all you need is a little bit of space. You can do a tremendous workout with just that. So if you know that there's certain times when you go to the gym that it's going to be busy, have something in your back pocket that you can take out and you can run through. My advice would be have an upper or lower body split or a push-pull leg split, and then just vary it depending on what you're supposed to train that day. But they're the kind of the two ways that I would work around it myself. Next question comes from Dylan Ruan. How can I detox after a lad's holiday? Okay, so this will probably be applicable for a lot of people now because of the time of year. So I'll do this for lads' holidays, girls' holidays, or just holidays in general. They tend to be a little bit different. Lads' and girls' holidays tend to be a bit more drink-fueled, some drug-fueled, depending on the culture you're in. Others, when you go away with your partner, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, tends to be a lot more food with drinks. So the actual context is a little bit differently, but the same things will apply. What I would do first is for getting your hands on, if it's been an alcohol-fueled holiday, get your hands on some milk thistle as soon as you get home. You'll get milk thistle in any Evergreen or Holland & Barrett or any of those health store shops. And the Vitamin Shop in Galway is it's where I got my milk thistle the last batch. And I would use that the entire week after the holiday, whether it's a lads or a girls holiday, and get your liver detoxified. What happens with alcohol is because it's a toxin, your body's detoxifying itself and your liver is working on overdrive, trying to detoxify all that alcohol that you've processed during the week, 10 days or 2 weeks that you're away. So milk thistle can speed up that process. The next thing then is your nutrition. It's funny because when you come home from a lads holiday or a girls holiday, the last thing you want to do is go back eating clean food, because your serotonin levels are down, your happy hormones, your energy, your mood is all lower as your body's detoxing itself from alcohol and whatever else you might have been doing. So it's harder to get back on track with food. But the flip side of that is when you go back and you don't eat the clean food and you get pizza or Coke or Ben & Jerry's or ice cream or whatever it is, and you're living off that, it prolongs the negative effects of your mood being low, your energy level suffering. Whereas if you get back on track as fast as you can with good, clean, healthy foods, that can help your body further to detoxify itself and get everything back to its homeostatic state faster than normal. So my advice would be to add in your milk thistle, go back clean eating as soon as you can when you get home, even if it means you're a little bit more lenient than you were before you went away. Just living off crappy food when you come back is going to make you feel way worse. So my advice would be to get that pinned down. If for whatever reason, if you were away, and I'm not advising, obviously people use recreational or party drugs, but if you were using recreational drugs, which I'm not a massive fan of, I think particularly when you're away on holidays, it's very fucking dangerous, because you don't know where the sources are coming from. You know, again, there's argument for that no recreational drug that can be bought in a street corner is going to be safe, but I'm not going to go into a political issue on that. However, if you were someone that uses recreational drugs, MDMA, ecstasy, pills, cocaine, whatever it is, I'd probably try and get your hands on some 5-HTP as well. 5-HTP is tripeptophan, which is effectively an amino acid that's a precursor for serotonin, which is your happy hormone. A precursor basically just means that it helps to make something else. So when you take tripeptophan, it can help your body make serotonin, which is a happy hormone. If you've been doing pills or MDMA or ecstasy, what happens, and the reason you get such an incredible high, is because there's such a flush of serotonin to your brain. So what happens is when you come off that and you wear off it, that serotonin can get downregulated, or your body's ability to make serotonin can get downregulated. So that's why your mood can drop massively. 5-HTP, supplementing that back in for the 5 to 7 days after you come back, can help get your mood back on track faster. That can also help with things like your food cravings. It can help with your sleep and energy as you try and get back into your REM cycles. What happens when you're away on a lads or a girls holiday as well is because you're staying up late nights, your circadian rhythm can get thrown all over the place. You're drinking alcohol. So if you're have too much alcohol in your system, your body won't drop into a good REM sleep, which is rapid eye movement sleep. It's when you process all the information through the day, and it's when your body repairs and regenerates itself. You don't drop into that state when you've been partying and drinking too much. So when you come back, your body's trying to catch up on that REM sleep, and that 5-HTP can help you wind down so that you fall into that REM sleep faster and more effectively, and you recover better as a result. So they'd be my main tips for recovering from a lad's holiday or a girl's holiday, is get your hands on milk thistle for alcohol, get your nutrition back on track as soon as you can. And then if you're in that scene that you use recreational drugs, which I'm not advising you do, but if you do, 5-HTP is probably going to be your best bet for getting your serotonin regulation back on track again. Next question comes in from Enos H on Snapchat. What are your thoughts on nootropics? So nootropics, for anyone that doesn't know, are basically smart drugs. You can get natural forms and you can get synthetic forms. So basically the whole, it's something that's very much trendy now in Silicon Valley and tech startups and the Google, Facebook world, nootropics, smart drugs. Just to give a little bit of context, anyone that isn't familiar with the term. My thoughts on them, I've been doing a lot more research on nootropics recently. I'm reading a book at the minute, it's called Everything Guide to Nootropics, which I quite like. It's the only book that I've been able to find that talks about synthetic nootropics, which is effectively like medicine nootropics that get your brain firing faster, and natural nootropics that are herbal and organic and won't do damage to your body. Basically, if anyone, just to give even a little bit more information on it, different nootropics work in different ways. They're supposed to make you smarter, or else they're supposed to help you retain information better, or they're supposed to make your mental cognition and brain cognition function at a more optimal level so you're able to get a higher output on things that you do. My thoughts, and I use natural nootropics. I'm a massive fan of Bacopa monnieri and phosphatidylserine, which I absolutely love for mental cognition, for focus, and for memory retention. And I definitely find they work. I put a little bit of Bacopa into my green smoothie in the morning. It works amazingly well for my retention because I listen to an audiobook for the first hour every day, and it helps my retention in that moment in time. I take phosphatidylserine twice during the day just to stay on top of everything and try and process information and keep my cognition up to speed. Again, it's marginal. I could perfectly live without them. They're very marginal gain. They give a slight edge and they do help slightly. Very similar to how BCAAs and creatine will work with fitness. They'll give you a little bit of a boost, but they're not going to make or break you if your nutrition is off. That's how nootropics are as well. I like to think of the natural nootropics similar to BCAAs, creatine, betalanine, your amino acids. Nootropics will not work if you're eating processed food. Nootropics will not work if you're not eating enough calories. Nootropics will not work if you're not eating good fats that are going to satiate your brain and keep everything functioning as best as it possibly can. However, if you have your nutrition on point and you're eating good clean foods and you're giving your body enough fats and you're giving your brain enough fats, nootropics can help with memory retention, they can help with brain cognition, and they can help move you to the next level. Very, very similar that if you take creatine and BCAAs and eat fucking McDonald's 3 times a day, it doesn't do anything, it's a waste of money. However, if you have your nutrition on point, you're spacing your meals, you've got your macros calculated, your calories are right, and then you add in branched chain amino acids and creatine, you can build more lean muscle. Nootropics are very, very similar. On the flip side of that, then there's the synthetic nootropics. Modafinil tends to be the most popular one, which is the one that I know Dave Asprey, the Bulletproof Diet guy, and a lot of the Silicon Valley billionaires and millionaires rave about. I personally wouldn't use it. I have a very, very addictive personality by nature. I tend to be a little bit binary with things. I'm either on, I'm off, I'm yes or a no. I don't really do things half pregnant. If I'm in, I'm all in. And I have an addictive personality, so I would be very, very wary of anything that would help my mental processing and my ability to retain information and my ability to get things done from a brain and mental cognition point of view. I feel would probably be highly addictive for me. One of the reasons that I stay away from things like cocaine and MDMA and all the other drugs that are going to affect brain chemicals is because because I have that addictive personality. I get obsessed with training. I get obsessed with business. I get obsessed with the things that I'm interested in that moment in time. Channeled correctly can serve me and anyone else that has a similar personality trait very effectively, but could actually destroy your life if you let it take hold. So I personally wouldn't go down the synthetic route. I wouldn't even chance it. I wouldn't even trial it. I kind of think personally for me, and whether this is right or wrong, and I changed my opinion, one of my favorite Charlie Munger quotes is, a year that you haven't given up one of your best loved ideas was probably a year wasted. So I do change my opinion on things. If you're listening to all podcasts, all videos, you'll see that I change my opinion. When new information is given, I will happily change my opinion, or I'll offer a different perspective if some more information has been given about a particular topic. So this is something that I may change my opinion on in 12, 18 months when there's more information out there, because nootropics are relatively new. Right now, I think synthetic nootropics are the same as steroids, the same way as I think the natural nootropics are the same as natural supplements, BCAAs, creatine, beta-alanine, for example. Again, I don't know whether that's right or wrong, but that's how I feel about them right now. I think anything that's synthetic, that's going to send your body completely into a chemical, different level chemically, which is what anabolic steroids do, which is what synthetic nootropics can do, I hold them in that same bracket. Again, each to their own. If you want to, somebody that uses anabolic steroids, use them. Somebody that uses synthetic nootropics, use them. It's your choice. People are always going to make their own decisions, but I tend to avoid that space purely for addictive reasons. Knowing myself, I pride myself on having self-awareness in things that I know I should avoid. I love it's an Alcohol Anonymous saying that if you don't want to slip, don't go to slippery places. I know myself that I would rather not put myself in the position that I would have to say no to giving up a synthetic nootropic or giving up a drug or giving up something that I know I'm probably going to get addicted to. I would just rather not go to the slippery place in the first place. And I live a lot of my life by that. It's the same for people that struggle with food, that struggle with junk food. I'm like, just don't have it in the house. I was like, if you don't want to slip, don't go to slippery places. You don't want to cheat on your partner, don't go to somewhere where you put yourself in the position that you may have to make the decision whether you want to cheat on your partner. If you don't want to cheat in your diet, don't land into McDonald's and expect your willpower to take over, because that is limited, as Kelly McGonigal has showed in her Willpower Instinct book and the studies done on willpower, that is a limited resource, that we run out of willpower. One of the reasons that people end up binging at the end of the day after a long day at work is because you used all your willpower at work, concentrating on your task or not telling your boss where to go and all of these things. And then it manifests itself in you binging at the end of the day because your willpower has ran out. There's great studies on that. And that Kelly McGonigal book, The Willpower Instinct, talks on these studies, how we only have a certain amount of willpower and how you can hack your life to make sure that you don't put yourself into the position that if you go to a slippery place, you're going to slip. Okay, next question from PDizzle12. Would you rather be attacked by a horse-sized duck or 10 duck-sized horses? I think I'd rather be attacked by 10 duck-sized horses. Firstly, I think if I ever go on the hiring process and start bringing in more people for Brian Keane Fitness, this is going to be an interview question. So get your answer right if you ever want to come work for me, because I will 100% ask this in an interview. I think I would pick 10... horse-sized ducks, purely because for the size reasons, because a duck at a horse size, there's nothing you can really do about it. However, if you've got small little ducks that are horses and they're attacking you, I feel that if you have any sort of skill and kicking ability and have any sort of rugby, football, soccer background, you're probably going to be able to kick a lot of those horses or duck-sized horses into left field pretty quickly. I wouldn't hedge my bets against a massive horse-sized duck. I don't even know how I would move that. And I think if I was attacked, even if you weren't able to outrun it, again, I don't know the quantum physics of what would happen to a duck and their mechanics if they were that size, but I think I would hedge my bets with a duck-sized horses and attack 10 of them. However, I'm very curious what other people would say about that. So if please go on to my Instagram, and where I put up this episode, go on to my Instagram and comment what you would pick underneath and why. Because I'm dying to know, and I'll respond. Anybody that takes their time out to answer this question, on my Instagram where I put up the post that's linking across this podcast, I will reply to every single one of them. So anyone that takes the time out of their day to go to my Instagram and reply what your answer would be and why, doesn't have to be long, I will reply to every one of them individually and I will read every single one of them individually because I'm curious what other people would do. So check out my Instagram, Brian_Keen_fitness. Just put in Brian Keen Fitness, it will come up. And under my podcast where I've linked this one, put your comment, your answer, and you'll see the question written up. What would you rather? Would you rather be attacked by a... I gotta read it out again. Would you rather be attacked by a horse-sized duck or 10 duck-sized horses? So comment on my Instagram and let me know what you think. So massive thank you to everyone for downloading and listening. For more information on me, head over to the website, www.briankeenfitness.com. My Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, Brian Keen Fitness. Make sure you check out my Instagram and please comment what you guys would do on your horse-sized ducks and your duck-sized horses. And my Snapchat, BrianK019. That's probably my most active platform right now, even though I'm pretty active on Instagram too. So check out both those platforms. Thank you to Coleman of Voxonic, who puts together all my podcast episodes. Thanks for listening. Catch you all soon.